As we said last week, you don't have to. It's completely up to you. But there are other classes going on in here, so I have a big mouth. That's part of the issue, okay? So I will try to be a little quieter as we teach today. But I just get excited and get all loud, Jim, I just have a problem with that, man. Don't say amen. let me say that Tanya is going to order some of the His Word books. Some of you may have, I know some of you have purchased and downloaded a copy on your tablet or phone or something. I've got it on mine and saved it in my Google Drive. But we're going to order some hard copies. And if what she needs you to do is to sign this list if you want her to order a copy. Okay, so she's going to try to do that tomorrow. The cost is $8. If you want to pay her today, that's great. Not necessary that you pay her today, but if you would like to, that'd be great. But we just need to know, because we're making that order, we need to know how many copies to get in here. So I'm going to pass this around. If you want to sign it, that's great. We're going to start week two. You already started week two at the beginning of the week. We're going to conclude week two today. And once again, that'll be Matthew chapter 6 through 10. So I'll discuss that in just a moment. I'm going to pass this around. I'll start with you. And once again, what you are ordering is the His Word devotional book. Okay? The way it is set up, it's set up Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. There is a devotional every day. So for example, tomorrow I actually wrote week three of the devotionals. I made a joke last week. I said, you know, the book is great. Week three is a little sketchy, but you'll pick up on that. So I wrote week three. So, for example, starting tomorrow. Yes, thank you, Tanya. Starting tomorrow, we're going to start Matthew 11 through 15. Okay, so what I would recommend is to read chapter 11 first. And then some point during the day, maybe in the morning, evening, I don't know, whenever you pause to read and pray, read through Monday's devotional. All it is a devotional. It's not an in-depth study, okay? So let me remind you of that. This is just a devotional to kind of help, you know, encourage you through the day. And then as you read through without any preconceived idea. I know this is the third week I've discussed this, but once again, we're ordering those books and just want to kind of give you an idea. So Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So chapter 12, chapter 13, chapter 14, Friday, chapter 15. All right. So we're starting week three tomorrow. Any questions about that? Thank you, Tanya, very much. Okay. Let's kind of start out this way today because we're starting with chapter 6, Matthew chapter 6. And once again, the way that we approach this is I assume that you have read Matthew chapter 6 through 10. Okay? So that's the idea. So we're going to come in here every week and we're going to talk about something unique from the text. Once again, we're dealing with 5 chapters in 1 week. There's no way in the world that I could give any kind of detail on 5 chapters in a 30-minute Bible class. We just can't do it, okay? So you're not going to, your spiritual growth's not all going to happen right here. Hopefully you're doing that through the week. We come in here and we talk about one thing, or we talk about a couple of things from the text that might be interesting. So kind of keep that in mind. Let me ask this question, because we're going to do this every week. As you read through Matthew chapter 6 through 10, and if you didn't read, we'll get more consistent with this. I realize this is a new start for some of you. Did anything come to the forefront of your mind, jump out at you, kind of stick in your mind from Matthew chapter 6 through 10 this week? Something that you read that just, and listen, this is a Bible class, so ladies, you can speak up in here. That is okay, all right? Yes, Felicia. Right. Right.
But what caught my attention was it seemed like it was a King
It's a limited commission. The commission is very much the same thing in concept to what we read in Matthew 28. So you get about half, or not really halfway, but in chapter 10, you get kind of that limited commission. You're just going to this group. And there were some unique things because they were disciples. Jesus was there. They had the ability to do some things rather interesting. But you're right. But the Great Commission is going to all the world, so it's not limited in that one. You bring up a couple of good points that I think are things that you will observe as you read through. Now, once again, Matthew chapters 5 through 7 are the Sermon on the Mount. It just happened to be the way that it was broken up this week, at the first week, and then this week was, you got the beginning of the Sermon on the Mount last week. That was Friday of last week. But you're right. I think that a lot of the Sermon on the Mount is built around that idea of trust and obey. Pen came off there. No, that's okay. So you kind of get that. And I think that's what God is saying through His Son, is that you need to trust me. So I see that too. And then the other idea is that Jesus starts to work those miracles. I think one of the things that we learn in those miracles is that He is God. I mean, what chapter was it? 8 or 9? I can't remember now. I don't have it right in front of me. But where He heals the guy who's lame, and He says, you know, He just walks by and says, "Your sins are forgiven you." And then they have an issue with that, right? Because who can forgive sins? Only God. And so Jesus says, well, which is easier to say? Which, by the way, which is easier to say? Just walk by and say, "Floyd, your sins are forgiven," or, "Okay, let's do this. Get up and walk and go through the whole process." Which is easier to say? Well, it's easier to say your sins are forgiven, right? That's just natural. But they had chapter 9. Thank you, Keith. Chapter 9. So, you know, this idea is that who is this guy? I mean, he's acting like he's God, and that's blaspheming, and that's, by the way, worthy of being stoned. And so Jesus just stops and says, okay, just so that you all know that the Son of Man has what? Power on earth to forgive sins. Which, by the way, personally, you know, if I'm looking at the thief on the cross and Jesus speaks words about being with me in paradise, I don't question that. I've heard people try to argue, you know, well, what's being expressed by paradise? What does that mean? What's the word? Well, Jesus said, "You're going to be with me in paradise." If He wants to take that thief on the cross to heaven, He has power on earth to do it. Correct? He is God. And that's the whole, that I think is the other aspect, is that those miracles kind of produce the fact that Jesus is who He is going, who some have claimed for Him to be and who He's claiming for Himself to be, and that is God in the flesh. Great thought. Yes, Keith.
One thing that pops out for me is our personal relationship with God should be just that. Not everybody needs to know what you're doing. So your gifts to God, whether it be fasting or it be praying and that type of thing, should be, as it says here, in secret service. Not that it's a secret that you're a Christian, but the gifts to God should be one and one and not necessarily other people. How do we know other people that, and I know some, but they'll do something they perceive as nice, and it'll be posted all over Facebook because they want that public accolade. Where Jesus says, "Surely," or God says, "Surely that's your gift." And Jesus says,
you know, I didn't think about it that way, but you may have touched on a modern day way of how we do. And I want to tell you, we are big in mission work. Let me just say, our family, personally, all of our kids have gone on mission trips. We've been to Panama. I didn't go to Panama. Christy did. That was an awful trip as far as, I mean, I'd like to stay in a hotel, right? I'm not about roughing it. Christy and the rest of them, they'll rough it. And so that was that. I'm glad they went and I stayed home. I stayed home with Madden on that trip. But, Panama, Peru. Our oldest son has gone to Peru a couple times. Nicaragua, that's where we are, where we have been recently. So there, you know, but what do we do, Keith, when we come back? We're posting all that good stuff that we're doing while we're on those trips. And I wonder if there, if that might be a more modern day, you know, doing things. I mean, you have to be, you have to do them before men. But maybe the perspective, why are we doing this? That's a lot of what I'm going to talk about this morning is wrapped around that idea, because last week, last Friday, if you read Matthew 5, what's one of the things that Jesus says in Matthew 5? Is it Matthew 5 or Matthew 6? I think it's Matthew 5. Let your lights before that they may see what? So he's not contradicting himself in chapter 6, you know, let your good works be seen before men. And then over here in chapter 6, but there is an issue at hand that I think that he's dealing with that is the heart of what those Pharisees are doing. Wouldn't you think that maybe the heart of what he's saying is dealing more with the motive behind why you're doing what you're doing? For example, what's the motive in Matthew 5? Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works in what? So your motive, Victor, is right. We're going to glory. It's about God. I'm doing what I'm doing. People are going to see what you're doing. I think the acts that are mentioned in chapter 6, like praying, giving, I can't remember what else was mentioned. What? Fasting, yes, those three. Which, by the way, are spiritual disciplines. Okay, we don't talk about spiritual disciplines much in the church, but we need to. Okay, those are spiritual disciplines that we need to be practicing. So you've got this idea in Matthew 6 where those things were what the Pharisees were portraying. Those are all things that can be done in secret. Like, no one needs to know. Now, there are people going to know. Whoever counts the money is going to know how much we give, right? I mean, if someone actually sees you bow your head, they're going to know that you're praying. But what they were doing is they were showing for show how much they're giving, how much they're praying. When they fast, everyone knew that they were fasting. So those ideas are, I think, more along the line of you do those in secret, your motive needs to be the same as when you're doing your good works to glorify God. I mean, why do people need to know that you're fasting? Which, by the way, I think it's great to fast, personally. I understand medically why it's not commanded, per se. I'm a diabetic. I couldn't fast for any period of time at all. I mean, if I did, I would be in trouble physically. Praying, that's a spiritual discipline. Pray in private. But if I want to pray before men just so that my motive is to enamor people with my eloquent words, then wouldn't you think that the praise that I get when someone says, "That was an awesome prayer," is really the only reward you're going to get? You get your reward immediately with a compliment. If that's your motive, if your motive is just to sound great. But yeah, you bring up a good point, and I do think that there is the reality, like you're saying, that we do a lot of things, and then we want people to know we're doing a lot of good things. Well, we should always do what we're doing with the idea that there's an audience of one, God, and He's the one we need to be. But I think a lot of it has to do with motive. But very, very good thought. I mean, and once again, I think that's the heart of chapter 6. That's why he's saying what he's saying. Anyone else this week on what you read? What's the most quoted verse, I would say, in the New Testament, but Matthew? Think about that. It was this week, by the way. I mean, we hear it all the time. Well, no, the golden rule, if you read day two, I thought the author of the devotional day two kind of put verse 12 and verse 1. Verse 12 is the verse you've quoted, Randy, that Do unto the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do. Which by the way, people that aren't even necessarily religious know that rule, right? But verse 1 and verse 12 are sort of bookends. What's verse 1? Matthew 7, verse 1. What? Judge not. Man, how many times do you hear that? Especially if you have any kind of religious perspective or any kind of stance biblically. Someone's going to say, now don't judge. And I thought the author did a good job on Tuesday, Matthew 7, by saying, look, we have to make judgment calls, right? I mean, there are things. Do the elders make judgment calls, yes or no? They have to, right? Do we as Christians make judgment calls? Yes, we have to, because there are some things that are just not right, that are sin. I would say that be careful about making big-time judgment out there. I think more judgment needs to be in here. Where is it that it says judgment begins first with whom? Does anyone know that verse? If not, you need to. That's exactly right. Where does judgment begin first? You know, you and me, or you and I guess, is correct. We signed up to follow this, right? How many of you signed up to follow Jesus Christ and His Word? Those people out there didn't. I find it interesting that the beautiful thing of free will is that God doesn't make us do what He wants us to do. But I find that our perspective at times is that we want those people out there to do what we want them to do. I want you to follow my morals. I want you to follow. Listen, I do want them to follow my morals. I do want them to obey God. I do want them, and we can make this list as long as we want. I want them to do that. But our mentality from maybe a more conservative viewpoint would be that we want to bind on those people certain truths that we believe about this. I want our country to be one nation under God. Don't misunderstand me. I'm with you. But I find it interesting that what we do is that we want those people out there to obey something they've never agreed to follow, when God Himself doesn't even do that with us, you and me, right? It's just an interesting perspective. But just getting back to this idea of judgment, judgment begins first with us. I mean, Paul in the Corinthian letter talks about the disciples are going to stand in judgment, and I think maybe that it's the sense of they're going to be with the Lord when Jesus judges the world. But in the same opening and in the same section, he says God will judge the unbeliever. So there is a sense where we have to make judgment call. And once again, I thought the author did a good job on Tuesday doing that, making that case. But maybe there's some truth to when people kind of throw that verse in our face, that we need to be careful with making sure we're doing what we're supposed to be doing instead of just throwing our Bible up in the faces of people who are not really wanting to follow it or trying to beat them over the head with it. Does that make any sense? I don't know if that makes any sense or not. Any other comments? Now, mind you, I'm very conservative, and I do want those people to obey it. But I don't think we can bind it on them. I just don't see that in the New Testament, in the Bible in general. Other comments? Some good thoughts in those verses. One thing that we won't focus on much, and I may preach on this in the future, Matthew chapter 7, you know, what's the last story in Matthew chapter 7? Which, by the way, let me back up. The point I meant to make a moment ago, let me go in reverse for just a moment. Back to this judge not, that you be not, because you're going to be judged with the same measure you judge with. It isn't interesting that verse 1 is that, and verse 12 is the verse that you quoted, Randy, that the golden rule. Isn't that verse 12, the golden rule? So if I'm going to be careful with my judgment, and the reality of how I live my life is going to be that I'm not going to do to others the way I want to be treated, Well, if that's the case, I'm going to be more careful with my judgment. Does that make sense? He did a good job with that. Now back to the last story. What's the last story in Matthew 7? Okay. Have you ever thought about why the Lord teaches that particular story at that point? That's the conclusion of the Sermon on the Mount, right? Why does He teach that? I mean, we can do our little song, right? You know, we can do that, but it's not shared to be a cute little song, although I'm grateful that it's a cute little song. But why does He share that at that point in the Sermon on the Mount? That's a good question to ask. Bearing fruit. Washed away. Yeah. So you mentioned two words that are in that text. The whole point of that story is those who do and those who do not. Now just back up a little bit. What is Matthew 7:21? Yeah. Not everyone who says to me, is that Matthew 7:21? Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will what? But he who... Okay, that underline that word. I mean, that to me, as he's concluding this, he stated a whole lot in chapter 5, 6, and up to that point in Matthew 7. Okay, the difference is, what are you going to do with it? I mean, we could talk about the Christian Constitution, Matthew 5, the beginning, the Beatitudes. You know, happy is the person who, and then you fill in the blank, right? Or we can talk about, I think, personally, I'm one of those who, as you start to see that section where Jesus talks about the condition of the heart, isn't that where our trouble is in our heart? I mean, think about this. People who commit adultery, do they just wake up one day and say, you know, today I'm going to commit adultery? Or today I believe today I'm going to murder somebody. Who does that? No one really does. Well, I'm sure there are exceptions to everything. People might wake up. But who commits adultery? Well, that's true. That's true. You are spot on. I've realized I can't get a thing past Keith over here. Those who first think about it and sin in their heart that way. Who kills someone? Who kills people? People who have already in their heart harbored ill feelings, hatred, whatever the case is. I'm sure there are accidents and exceptions to all of this, but you understand the point. He's overstating the issue. Let me also say one other thing. That in those situations where he says, for example, you know, if you've lusted after someone, you've committed adultery where? In your heart. Please pick up on that. I knew an eldership who a young lady came in. I'm not going to share any names, not that you would ever know them or the eldership. But a girl came in and she said, my husband is addicted to pornography and I have a biblical right to get a divorce. They discussed through this particular verse and so as a result, they gave her their agreement and their willingness to accept her viewpoint and said, you go right ahead, you have a biblical right to divorce. Let me say, that is not true, number one. You cannot do that. Is it a sin? Is looking at pornography a sin? Absolutely. The thought of a sin is not the same thing as the overt act of a sin. Thinking something is way different than actually putting it into action. Would you agree? I mean, for example, who is going to go to court and be tried on the basis of hatred in their heart and condemned to a prison sentence just because they didn't like someone or hated someone? Now, they can go to jail for killing someone, But because they're thinking about it in their mind doesn't mean they've actually done it. They're not going to be put in jail just because they've thought about it. Well, that's not actually true. I guess technically you can, you know, make arrangements to kill someone and that never happens. You can, what do they call it? Premeditation. Yeah, premeditated. Yeah, so there are exceptions to this too. But you get the point. The thought of a sin is not the same thing as the overt act of a sin. Okay? But once again, back to this whole idea of do and do not. That's the whole reason Jesus teaches that. He is using something that they completely understand. I would say that when we, if we were, for example, if we were to talk about floods, who understands more about flooding? People in this area or people in Alabama? People in this area, right? So while that sounds like a cute little story at the end of Matthew 7, if you understand that you can build on a foundation that looks completely solid, and then when a flood comes, man, that foundation is very deceptive, right? Because then you've lost your whole house. So they understood that. The point, I think, of the whole teaching of what Jesus is saying in this whole sermon about, I didn't come to destroy the law, but to fulfill it. I didn't come to come to take away any one point of the law. He would go on to talk about issues that we need to be involved in life, trusting Him, obeying Him. But the crux of it all, the crux of the Sermon on the Mount is, what are you going to do with it? You going to follow it? Or are we going to be more interested in making those people out there follow it? I mean, His point is, if you want to follow Me, if you come after Me, then you have to deny yourself, take up your cross, and follow Me. So it's a matter of do and do not, Jim. Those two words, do and do not. What are you going to do with the Sermon on the Mount? You're going to put it into action? Any other comments, real quick? Okay, look back at chapter 6. Let's look back there for just a moment. I left my glasses today at home, so I've got to have long arms. Matthew chapter 6. Once again, this goes back, Keith, what you said earlier, I think is one of the things I want to focus on. And the idea here is, take heed that you do not do your charitable deeds before men. I don't know if you remember when I tried out, when I came and tried out. I actually talked a lot about Matthew 6. I personally believe that the greater issue here is, and if you read through chapter 6 totally and you look at all that's being said, I don't know if you remember me talking about idioms, Hebrew idioms. I believe there's something in Matthew chapter 6 about the way we view our stuff versus the way we view people. He also talks a lot about worry in chapter 6, which, by the way, those two go hand in hand. The thing that you are devoted to the most is the thing you worry about. Once again, I may preach on that at some time in the future. But think about that. The thing that you are devoted to the most, what does the Lord say? Where your heart is, or where your treasure is, there heart will be also. Let me give you a case in point. I don't worry about Michael's kids' grades. I don't. His daughter in college, son in school. I don't worry about your kids' grades. Now you may think, well, that's awful insensitive. I can't believe he just said that right here in church. You know? But I want to tell you why I don't worry about his, because I'm not devoted to his children's grades. Now, are his parents, Gabe's parents, worried about his grades? I can't remember your daughter's name. Megan. Okay. Are they worried about her grades? Absolutely. I mean, they're paying for those grades. But why? Because that's what they're devoted to. The thing that you are devoted to, you know, I don't worry about your retirement. I don't. You know, why? Because I'm not devoted to your retirement. The things that we worry about the most are the things that we are devoted to. Okay? And I think that's a big section. So in Matthew chapter 6, I think the overarching idea is, I want you to be devoted to people. Invest in people. That's God's greatest commodity is people. I want you to look at people in the proper light. And that's a little bit about what I talked about, the idea of the way we view our stuff. We put more emphasis on stuff than we do people. You're going to read in Matthew as we get a little further into it. I don't remember off the top of my head. But it's Matthew or Mark where he says, you know, you think more of sheep than you do people. And you're going to catch that over and over. As we read through these Gospels, Jesus is often going to get on to the religious leaders of his day, the Jews, the elite Jews, the religious Jews, Pharisees, scribes, Sadducees, there are others. He's going to get on to them because they're more interested in stuff than they are people. So if my interest is stuff, then I'm going to make sure that I have the right stuff. I'm going to make sure I give the right appearance before people because that's where my heart is. And so he says here, it's not about doing stuff before men. Now, once again, it's not a contradiction. I think the idea is motive. What was the motive of the Pharisees when they did everything they did? What? To be seen, but praise from men. What else? If you look religious and act religious, you're going to be held in a higher view, upper echelon. Maybe that may be a way to put it. But also, if your motive is getting into the pockets of the people, which, by the way, you know, this modern televangelist, you know, just send your money to me and you're going to be blessed. You know, we had a group when I first started preaching in Alabama. It was with the Loser Church of Christ. And there was a church not far from us, and they were of that evangelistic mindset, that very charismatic chaos, if you will. That's what I call it. Preacher got up one Sunday and he was all about the money. He owned a couple of houses right there in a small rural, in some ways economically depressed area of Alabama. And this guy's just rolling in it, right? Well, he gets up one Sunday and he says, I had a dream last night that this church bought me a new Harley and I rode it down the center aisle of the church building. Now, first of all, God's not going to give you that kind of vision, number one. Number two, why would you even share that? You know what that church did? Bought him a new Harley Davidson and he rode it down the center aisle of the church building. And that was just 6 or 7 miles from where I was preaching. Had a deacon once, they had financial records of most of the members, had a deacon at that particular church. Now, this is not a Church of Christ. Once again, it was a denomination. I don't even remember what they were. Guy was a local football coach, and he sang in their choir, and they got his records, his financial records, and said, "You're not given what you need to be given." Now, Mike, that might be one way to do it. I don't know. We're talking about raising money. Might be one way to do it. Yeah, he's listening, you know. So they called this guy and his wife in. They said, you know, we have your records. We know what you make. We know, you know, what you file, and you're not given what you should. So we're kicking you out of the choir, and you're not going to be excommunicated, but you're going to be down on low on the list for a while until you get your contribution up. Well, what kind of message does that send? That we're all about money. Well, first of all, Mike's saying one of the messages it sends is we pay our bills. but think about it. You know, what does that communicate? It's all about money and not necessarily about people. I think that what we see in our viewpoint today with some of these religious, chaotic people is the very thing that these Pharisees were guilty of. They were all about being seen. They were all about the money, you know. That's why he says where your treasure is, that's where your heart's going to be. These people, they were that deep spiritually. And I think that that's what you see. So he says it's your motive has to be right. Where does your motive begin? Think about that. Where does the motive for anything begin? In your heart. Miss Millie says in your heart. She's right. Why do you think Jesus immediately starts to talk about the heart? That's where everything starts. My love for God, my love for His creation, my love for His commandments, His Word, my love for doing what He wants me to do, my love for, and you name it, dot, 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 it starts right here. So I think the issue, as he starts chapter 6, is an issue of the heart. So if you get nothing else out of today, leave here today thinking that in chapter 6, Jesus talked a lot about the condition of the heart. Okay? How much time do we have, Mark? 5 minutes, okay? So he's talking about the condition of the heart. So when you do whatever you, there's nothing wrong with doing things so that they can be seen by others. Maybe the motive is, this is a great Facebook post. I do remember, Keith, reading an article, it's been a few years ago, and this just kind of came to mind, about some missionaries who were in the work overseas. They were saying to groups that come from the U.S., you know, don't come just so you can have a great picture. And because you think about it, these people, when we went to Nicaragua, I went to Russia several years ago, and I went to Nicaragua last year. I'm not necessarily a goer. I'm a stayer. I mean, my mindset is God said, lo, I be with you. You have to fly. He didn't say anything about high, I be with you, right? He said, lo, I be with you. So I'm all about staying local. My wife would go any opportunity she had. But we would get over there in some of the poorest, most extreme conditions in Nicaragua. And our kids, they'd be wanting to pull out their cell phones, take pictures. And, you know, it just makes me think about that. I don't know that I was actually thinking about that over there. But thinking back to that article, maybe there's something to that. Our motive needs to be proper and right. And I think that that's what, maybe that might be an equivalent for today. When you do a charitable deed, verse 2, do not sound a trumpet. See, what's the motive here? What's the motive in verse 2? Once again, to be seen by men. Victor, when you do something great and you say, hey, everybody, look at me, and we brag on you, man, that Victor, he's a great guy. That's all the praise you're going to get right then. And that's kind of what he says. They have glory from men. Surely I say to you, they have their reward. But when you do a charitable deed, do we need to do it? It's not a matter of whether we should or shouldn't. We should, right? It's the motive behind what you're doing. When you do a charitable deed, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, that your charitable deed may be done in secret. And your Father who sees what? Okay. God will not ever miss the good you do. Right? God will never miss the good you do. He'll never miss the good I do. If we think, man, no one, I did that, no one knew about it. I did a funeral of one of my close friends back a couple of months before we moved here. Larry Young, very, very young, by the way. He was right around early 60s, 61, 62. Got cancer. And within like 3 months, he died. Larry, if I'm thinking about someone who kind of fulfills this idea, it's Larry Young. I cannot tell you how many people Larry would help, and no one knew a thing about it. You know, he would find people who either had serious health problems, were older, and they didn't have to be members of the church, and he would help them. He'd do building project for them. He revamped our bathrooms. No one really knew he did it. He came up there during the day. No one saw him except me. I'd go in there and visit with him. But Larry didn't care if anyone mentioned him. As a matter of fact, he'd say, "Don't say anything. I don't want this." You know, he was all about, "I'm just going to serve God, and God's going to know, and that's all that matters." And I think that's the idea here. You know, God will never forget. Our time's basically up. You get kind of in the crux of this, the Lord's Prayer, but then it kind of comes back to this idea at about verse 19 and follows it out again. Let me just mention one thing as we close today. I'll just kind of mention this in passing, and then maybe in the future we'll talk more about it. But he says, do not worry, right? Do not worry. For the majority of us, we get that, right? But let me just give a word of caution. Do not, people who struggle medically with depression, anxiety, don't kind of put them in this category. They have a medical condition that they can't. Now, I don't have that medical condition. I read those words and I think back to what Felicia said at the very beginning. What God is saying is, trust me, right? But I want to give you just this illustration. The class will be over. I'm a diabetic, right? If I don't take insulin, you know what's going to happen to me? I'm going to die. And I would say within a week or two, anyway, if it was an extreme, I might last another week. But within a week, if I had no insulin, I would die. I need this to live. I need this to function. There are some people medically who have an illness that they need medicine for. I mean, they can't control their emotions. And I think the way that our society and even some in the church, people will say, well, they just need to get over it. Well, that'd be like telling me, well, why don't you just get over diabetes? You know, no one's going to say that to me. So let's just be very cautious about that, okay? There are people who are on medicine for anxiety, for stress, for depression. They need that, okay? So don't take verses like don't worry and just kind of slap them upside the head with it. Understand that is a serious medical, like your high blood, how many of you take high blood pressure medicine? Okay? It's an illness just like that. Just as you need medication for that, some people, so be very careful with that. All right, thank you. Sorry, Mark, for staying.